Columbia, I've seen your mountains high, seen your pretty rainbows and your blue crystal skies, watched your winding rivers as they flow around the bend. To me, you're not a stranger, you'll always be a friend.
Coming to you from the West Coast, this is Politicos. Today's episode was recorded live on October 23rd, 2018. This is episode 109. Politicos is the BC Politics Podcast. If you haven't already, make sure to subscribe and leave a review wherever you found us. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, where we're at Politicos Pod, and support the show at patreon.com/politicos. The intro music you're hearing, as always, is Beautiful British Columbia by Sergei Plotnikov. On today's show, our electoral reform debate, hosted by the Canadian Club. We'll be back next week with all of the news that's been happening this week. Politicos is in partnership with BC Today, British Columbia's daily newsletter dedicated exclusively to BC politics. Sign up for a free trial to have unique coverage of the BC legislature delivered to your inbox every morning. Listeners to Politicos, enter the offer code CITIZEN for access to a special rate. For your free two-week trial of the newsletter, go to britishcolumbiatoday.ca.
I'm going to introduce our guest speakers, but first of all, I'd like to invite up our moderators. Will be Ian Bushfield and Scott Langboom, co-hosts of the Political Coast podcast, to come and get settled. So representing the no side is the Honourable Susan Anton, QC, who is a director of the No BC Proportional Representation Society. And representing the yes side is Seth Klein, BC Director of the Canadian Centre for policy alternatives. Each one of them will make a case for why we should change our voting system or keep it the same. I invite them all up to the panel. Thank you.
Thank you all, and thank you both for joining us. I just do want to begin by acknowledging we're on the traditional and unceded territories of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh people. As was mentioned, Scott and I host a podcast, an internet radio show, basically, for BC politics, and we've been doing that since October 2016. And it was through that I think Matthew heard about us and reached out and said, you should host a debate here. And we were like, that sounds like fun. And so here we are. So thank you so much, Matthew, and the Canadian Club, and all the staff as well for helping make this possible, and Carolina for your awesome work. In today's debate, we're going to have opening statements from both of our speakers of about 10 minutes. I'm going to actually flip a coin to decide who goes first. Heads is the queen that represents the status quo, the system we know and that the queen uses first past the post. Tails is another kind of beast, some kind of proportional system that after we flip the coin, they'll give their speeches. Scott and I both have two questions, one for each of you. Then we're actually going to ask you to put one question to the other to sort of hopefully draw out some more distinctions. And hopefully we'll have some time for both a brief final remark from each of them and any questions from the audience, and also finishing by 1:55. So let's see who begins.
It'll be Tails. Seth.
Beast.
Saloon.
Good afternoon. It's wonderful to be here with you, and thank you to your club for making time to discuss this important topic. And it's my pleasure to be debating this question with Suzanne. This is our fifth debate, I think, if you include the radio. We've heard everything the other has to say at this point. And I want to say, as I've said before, this may be a surprise to some of you, but notwithstanding our obvious differences on this question and others, we have a personal connection. Suzanne is very close friends with my mother's parents and was at my wedding. And so I just say that so that you can appreciate really the constraints we're both under this afternoon, which is that if we're not on our best behavior, this might get back to my in-laws. So I have been passionate about proportional representation since I was a teenager in high school, and I still am. It is my view that this referendum and proportional representation and electoral reform represent a huge opportunity to strengthen our democracy, to improve policymaking, just to broaden the range of new ideas and a chance fundamentally to liberate all of us to vote our values. I want to make the case that our current electoral system is ailing and that switching to a form of pro-rep will fix that. And we hear a lot, I believe, of fear-mongering from the no side, and I hope to dispute many of these claims that we hear. So first of all, why is our current first-past-the-post system so messed up? Exhibit A. So there's actually very few major democracies that still use first past the post. there's the US, there's the UK, there's India and Pakistan, a few other former British colonies, and there's us. And look at the record. Trump lost the popular vote to Hillary Clinton. He is in the White House. And these far-right, alt-right elements live in the White House with him. The most recent Indian election, which saw the election of Modi and the BJP, a far-right Hindu nationalist party that won with 31% of the popular vote. Exhibit B is the most recent Canadian example. So in June, we had the election of Doug Ford in Ontario with 40% of the vote. He gets 61% of the seats, 100% of the political power. More recently, a couple of weeks ago in Quebec, François Legault and the CAQ win a majority government with 38% of the popular vote, riding anti-immigrant policies to victory. My point being that first past the post doesn't just help anti-immigrant parties win seats, it sometimes grants them government. And this is the dynamic of what we call false majorities. A court check on the power of false majorities is supposed to be the courts, and yet both of these new premiers have indicated their willingness to invoke the notwithstanding clause to override the courts. I want to quickly walk you through some BC electoral history. Point being here that the false majorities problem actually cuts both ways. In 1996, the NDP lost the popular vote to the Liberals, but the Liberal vote was less efficient. And so the NDP won a false majority. 2001 is an interesting one. It's actually the only time in half a century that a governing party won an outright majority. Gordon Campbell won 57% of the vote. But remember what happened. It was a wipeout. They won every seat except two in East Vancouver. The NDP lost official party status. That's not healthy in a democracy. You want Her Majesty's official loyal opposition to be able to do its job. 2005, 2009, 2013, BC Liberals win more false majorities. Another problem with first past the post is that it forces people to engage in what we call strategic voting. Strategic voting means not voting your values. Effectively, our elections become this two-horse race between two parties. The bandwidth of choice and discourse is narrowed, and we feel forced to vote strategically not for what we most want, but against whom we most fear or dislike. That's not real choice. If you're a free market-oriented person now, but frustrated with the BC Liberals, you have nowhere to go but hold your nose or opt out. If you're a lefty voter, but you're frustrated with the NDP, you have nowhere to go but to suck it up or sit it out. First past the post limits competition. Another problem is the problem of what we call wasted votes. And it plays out in a couple ways. First of all, most of us live in safe ridings where the outcome is a foregone conclusion. And lots of people feel like, why bother voting? It's hard to blame them. And consider this. Out of the 1.9 million votes that were cast in the last BC election a little over a year ago, about a million of them, 49% of them, were cast for a candidate who lost. And the next day, those votes evaporate. I am convinced that we are creative enough to come up with an electoral system where that's not so, where all of our votes find their desired political expression. From a policy point of view, which is the area I work in, our system also has the problem of what we call policy lurch, meaning as power and false majorities swing between two parties, each new government spends a chunk of their time effectively undoing the policies of the previous government. You see it now with Ford undoing Wynne or Trump undoing Obama. It's inefficient, it's bad for business. Imagine if you are in the clean energy business in Ontario and you've invested millions of dollars only to have the Ford government change the entire regime upon which your decisions were based. If you think this isn't just some esoteric concern, if you are freaked out a little bit, as I am, by the most recent report a couple weeks ago by the International Panel on Climate Change telling us that we have 12 years in order to dramatically reduce our GHG emissions, we don't have time for this BS. Time and progress is of the essence. All told, I think what I've just walked you through has resulted in first past the post doing harm to our faith in democracy. And that disillusionment is part of the long-term downward trend in voter turnout, where Canada ranks 26th out of 34 OECD countries in terms of voter turnout. So how would switching to a system of pro-rep fix this? First of all, what is pro-rep? So the first thing to appreciate is that it's not a single system. There are many forms of pro-rep. It's a principle, but they all of those systems have this in common. First of all, simply, what you get in the popular vote is reflected in the distribution of seats. If you win 30% of the vote, you get 30% of the seats. It's stable because, unlike the policy lurch that I just described, you have governments passing policies that have to win majority support and that are therefore built to last. And they're successful. 9 out of 10 of the top economies in the OECD use PR. The US is the only country there that doesn't. Having pro-rep would mean almost always having minority outcomes. I think that's great. I like minority government. It forces cooperation. Parties have to put together governing alliances or coalitions that in combination reflect the majority of voters. A common argument against pro-rep is that it produces governments that are unstable and can't get anything done. It's not true. Some of our country's most popular and long-lasting policies, old age security, the Canada Pension Plan, Medicare itself, are all a product of minority federal governments. And on a related point, I think it produces more accountable government. I like minority governments, and I contend that they are more accountable. I believe in the current situation we have now in BC, that the Greens are holding the NDP more to account for their own promises than had the NDP won a majority outright. Governments can't simply govern with impunity, but it's deeper than that. If you only need 40% to secure outright power, you don't need to concern yourself with the other 60. My work at the CCPA is mainly in the realm of poverty reduction. And so I often would ask myself, why was the last government so resistant to adopting a poverty reduction plan? Why were they content to let welfare rates be frozen for 10 years? Why did they drag their heels for so long on the housing affordability crisis? And I'm forced to conclude, I hate to say it, it's a bit cynical, that a calculation was made that the people most impacted weren't part of their 40%. But when every vote counts, every vote matters. What we also know from a policy point of view is that the evidence is, by many measures, PR countries produce better policy and have more caring and gentle societies. That's a quote from Arndt Leiphardt, who is really one of the foremost global authorities on comparative political systems. What we know from the research comparing PR versus majoritarian or winner-take-all countries across the OECD is that PR countries have less inequality, and it's highly statistically significant. We know they score higher on the United Nations Index on Human Development, incorporating health, education, and quality of life indicators. Overall, the empirical research across the OECD shows that PR countries outperform winner-take-all systems on measures of democracy, quality of life, income inequality, diversity among elected representatives, values of tolerance, environmental performance, and fiscal policy. We know from that comparative work that voter turnout is about 7 percentage points higher, for young people, 12 percentage points higher. 85% of industrialized countries use some form of PR. And yet we are told that it's somehow too complicated. I don't believe British Columbians are stupider than these good people. But because most democracies use PR, it's fairly easy for people on the no side to cherry-pick examples pointing to individual countries experiencing some challenge and seek to pin it on the electoral system rather than any number of other factors. We don't have time to go into the detail of the three models, but they all have this in common. They're all a huge improvement over what we have now. They will all produce proportional outcomes based on what we actually vote for. I believe they not only preserve but enhance local representation. They all improve the diversity of the legislature. They all ensure that no region will have fewer MLAs than they currently have. They're all innovative, made in BC models that reflect our unique needs and geography. None will significantly increase the size of the legislature, which is capped at 8 new seats. They all include a minimum threshold of 5% that a party has to win to secure a seat. And if you're still feeling nervous, the current Attorney General has already embedded in law this week that there, if we choose to change, a second confirmation referendum after 2 elections under a new model, which is great. We get to road test a new system, see if we like it. But the interesting point is that I'm not aware of any country that has ever switched to PR and then chosen to go back the other direction. So in sum, I think there are many reasons to vote for a change and to liberate ourselves to vote our values. Thank you.
Thank you, Seth. And now Suzanne Anton for the no side.
Thank you very much. What a pleasure it is to be here. So as you heard, my name is Suzanne Anton, and I am a co-director of the No to BC Proportional Representation Society. We're the official proponent on the no side. We are a nonpartisan organization. Many of you will know me as a former elected MLA in Vancouver Fraser View, Ian Waddell's old riding, and as the Attorney General in the previous BC Liberal government of Premier Christy Clark. My partner in the no side is Bill Thielman, a longtime, hardcore, lifelong NDP guy. And the third of us is, you might consider right up the middle, Bob Plekis, a very senior deputy minister in numerous governments. I think social credit, certainly NDP and also BC Liberal. So we're a very cross-partisan organization. And proudly, although we are very political, of course, this is a political issue, we are completely nonpartisan. And we are nonpartisan. And you know who else is nonpartisan? Your MLA, when you're in the community. When Ian was out and about in Vancouver Fraser View, he didn't wear a big sign saying Ian Waddell, NDP, MLA. He went out. Ian, was there ever anybody you turned away from your door because you didn't like their politics? Never. Never. So I think the fundamental misconception that the PR people make is that your MLA will only serve you if you can only talk to your MLA if they have the same politics as you do. Nothing could be further from the truth. We have a completely different model than what is being proposed by proportional representation. We have a model of 87 separate elections in British Columbia, 87 separate ridings, 87 separate elections where communities look, they look at that person, that person, that person, and that person, and they decide on any number of factors who they're going to vote for. They like their character, they know them to be people of good character, their community leadership, they know they've accomplished things in their community. Yes, their political party as well, but the political party is only one of many things. It is not the only thing. In proportional representation, the only thing is the political party, because it is the votes that the political parties get that determine the composition of the legislature. What determines the composition of our legislature right now is 87 separate sets of communities around British Columbia assessing their people and deciding who will best represent their community. And when that person is elected, they go out and work hard for their community. So when Killarney Community Center needed more money for its senior center, and one of the big proponents was a guy I know perfectly well because he said so to me at the door that he would never vote for me in 1,000 years, did I say, no, I'm not going to help you because you said that to me on your doorstep? Are you kidding? Of course I'm going to help him. Of course I'm going to help the community, because that is my job, to find them the rest of the money for the community center. And when they need it, that was only one of many, by the way, and there were many people. It was a very kind group, but it was kind of funny. But it was a great illustration of how when you're an MLA, you help everyone who comes through your door. There were a number of people who wanted to set up child cares. Did I say to them, I'll only help you with your child care if I know you vote for me? Of course not. It is your job as an MLA to represent your community, to help them with their individual issues, to help them with their collective issues, new roads, new hospitals, new better health care, better child care, and so on. And it's your job as an MLA, right, Ian, to take those issues back to Victoria with you and put those issues on the table of whoever it mattered, whether you were in government or you were in opposition. You promote those issues in Victoria. And believe you me, every single one of our 87 MLAs does that. The PR people would like us to change that system. They would like to reduce the amount of directly elected MLAs to some unknown formula. Unfortunately, neither Seth nor I can tell you the formula, because when you got that little booklet in the mail the other day, how many people read that booklet? I did. When you look through that booklet, they say, well, direct, dual member, well, it's this, this, and this, and there's a whole bunch of stuff we don't know yet. Mixed member, it's this, this, and this, and there's a whole bunch of stuff we don't know yet. I think it's disrespectful to ask voters to vote for that. So when I'm a little bit vague about the numbers, it is because it is impossible to be clear about the numbers. But what I can say to you is, dual member, about half the people are directly elected as your choice, and the other half, some algorithm will put there for you. In mixed member, about 60%, I think, will be the directly elected. So every riding will be quite a bit bigger. The other 40%, you will vote somehow for a political party, which will somehow assign those people to some region of the country around you. So if you're in Northern BC, your region might be Northern BC. 11 MLAs there right now would be reduced to, say, 6. And then you feed in a bunch of other people to make up the proportionality. Well, I know what those 6 people will be doing. They'll be doing what Ian did and what I did as an MLA, working hard for their districts. What will the other 4 people be doing? They're there to represent the NDP party, or the Liberal Party, or the marijuana party. I like to use the marijuana party, except I'm afraid they're probably their purpose has probably come and gone. But I like to use them for illustrative purposes. So you can get a small party, if they get enough votes, 5% of the votes, you've got to put them somewhere. So maybe you put one of them up north as well. Where are they going to have their offices? Prince George. What good are those people going to do? Their only purpose is to be political. Ian's purpose, my purpose, every MLA's purpose right now is to work for their community in a non-partisan, impartial way, hardworking way. The other people, the political people, are just there to collect salaries and be political. I'm sorry, but that does not seem like a very good system to me. Now, if it turned out well around the world, maybe it wouldn't matter. We can't look at Canadian examples because we don't have Canadian examples of PR. So you've got to look in other countries in the world. And they form a very clear pattern. Seth talks about how in the post-war era they had PR and a lot of the countries in Northern Europe, which is really who we have to compare ourselves to. I'm not going to draw comparisons with Indonesia or South Africa, which are just not doing well at all. We have to compare ourselves to countries which are more comparable to us. So there are many PR examples in Northern Europe. They're not doing well now. The big parties are breaking down. Small special interest parties are forming. And they have a very difficult time forming government and keeping government. Germany, I think, went 100 days the last time to form government. One of the things that PR people, Seth didn't say it this morning, but one of the things they love to talk about is how you get all these coalition parties. Well, you did talk about coalitions. And everybody has to get on. Won't that be nice? In Northern Ireland, they have to get on. You know how long they haven't got on for? Over 18 months now. And that's not necessarily a PR question, but that's a question of having to get on. Sweden had an election a month and a half ago. They're not getting on too well. Italy has gotten on so well that they've had 64 governments in 72 years. They're not getting on so well in Italy either. It is not a good system when you don't have a government. Holland went 200 days without a government. These countries, it is very, very, Belgium went 589 days. It's very difficult for them to form governments. Why would we be inviting that into BC? When we have a stable, by the way, that simple, stable, and successful, that's our slogan. Any of you who picked up the thing, it's always nice when your opponents choose your slogan and try and run with it. Thank you, very complimentary to us. We have a simple system here. Everyone knows. How many people here understand how their MLA got elected? Everybody. How many people understand mixed member proportional? Nobody. You do not. Seth, that's nice, and I'm glad you put up your hand. That was very game of you. But actually, you can't understand it because it's not explained. So why would we trade in a simple system for a system which leads to these coalition governments, no steady hand at the helm, and what's more, accountable governments? So no stable governments. This comment from The Guardian, parties are in retreat, coalition forming harder, weaker, shorter-lived governments. That's what we have in PR countries in Europe now. Second big problem, extremism. And we've got an ad running out there right now, which is a little provocative, and we're getting lots of feedback on it. But the fact of the matter is, when you can get elected with 5% of the vote, extremist parties get elected.
Final minute.
And I can be no blunter than that. Extremist parties get elected. There is an extremist party in Sweden right now, lovely liberal Sweden, with a neo-Nazi background. They're at nearly 20%. That's one of the reasons Sweden can't form government. All through the Northern European countries, there are very strong extremist parties getting elected, getting their foot in the door. We don't have that here, because no riding will vote for an extremist. In our first past the post system, people look at people at the candidates running in front of them. They will not vote for crazy people. Voters are smart, and the collective interest of voters in a community is smarter. We had Ujjal Dosanjh speaking yesterday, a former premier, former NDP premier. You will all know him well. very strongly against proportional representation. He is somebody who knows better than almost anyone in this province of the problems extremism brings. And for that reason, he recommends that we do not vote for PR.
Thank you. That is time.
Okay. I will just put up my picture of the ballot, which is how I recommend that you vote. Fill in the top button, and you don't have to do anything else. Send it back. Thank you very much.
Okay, now we're going to move on to the segment of the debate where we're going to ask each of the participants a series of questions. So first question goes to Seth. Vancouver's just had a local election, and there was a preponderance of new parties, candidates running. We actually had a record length of a ballot this time, and there was a drop in turnout. It seems likely that under a new system with a new ballot and potentially a longer ballot, we could have people who would be more confused and are less likely to participate. How can you reassure people that the general voting public will be able to understand and make an informed choice?
Well, there's a lot there in your question. So first of all, I would point out that most democracies seem to manage just fine. And it is telling, I think, that while over 80% of industrialized country democracies use PR, none of them have ever chosen to go backwards and return to a system like first past the post. They manage, they're smart enough, I think we're smart enough. And the evidence is also clear that voter turnout is higher in all of those countries than it is in ours. I mean, that is the clear trend. And it's not just voter turnout, incidentally. It's questions that get at people's faith in democracy and democratic institutions, which are stronger in those PR countries. I think under any of these alternatives, the ballots that we will have before us will have more choice than the system that we have now. I think people like more choice. There are a number of options. I particularly like STV and the rural-urban option, which most empowers the individual voter to rank all of the candidates. So will it be a slightly, will there be more on the ballot than in a simple one like we have now? Yes. But not, by the way, as confusing as the at-large system that we were just experiencing. And I've had some fun pointing out to Suzanne before, when Suzanne was a municipal city councillor, she campaigned against wards and for the at-large system that we have now, which is mighty confusing. But let me point out that the Vancouver city jurisdiction under at-large is more than twice the size of any riding we're looking at under any of the three models. So I think we can manage.
All right, thank you. My question for Suzanne, while we're on the topic of, I guess, how different systems have been used, I think we maybe all know that BC hasn't always used a purely first-past-the-post system. In the past, there was a brief period of experimentation with alternative or ranked ballots in 51, I think it was 52 and 53, to keep the commies out, as it were. And up until 1991, we still had 17 dual-member ridings, where people had two representatives rather than just one. So if we've had this passed with different types of electoral systems, why should British Columbians be afraid of change today?
The reasons to which I mentioned earlier were because it doesn't work. It's a bad system. PR is a bad system, and it may be that they don't vote to go back, but when you look around Europe, people are crying out for different systems. They're always trying to figure out how to get themselves out of the pickle that they're in, of being unable to form government, of having extreme parties. The other fundamental problem, Seth mentioned that he loves coalition governments. If you have a coalition government that puts in something, a tax that people hate, who's accountable? You don't even have good accountability in PR systems. When Premier Horgan has put in a tax, which there's a couple of them that I'm not dead keen on myself, but two things. I respect his authority to do that because he's the premier and he has government right now. Coalition and government. Secondly, I respect the authority of the voters to hold him accountable in 2 or 3 years' time, whenever it is. And if voters like it, then they keep that government. If they don't like it, they don't. But everyone knows who's accountable for these decisions. Everyone knows. And coalition governments, you don't know. You lose that fundamental accountability, the ability to, as they say, kick the bums out. So we should keep our system, which leads to nice, stable governments. We're in one of the best places in the world. There's really no argument in this jurisdiction for bringing in the troubles and the difficulties that they have in Europe in their PR systems.
All right, we'll ask the next question to you, Seth. If we go to proportional representation, we can get any of the three models we've sort of talked about, but two of these, dual member and rural urban, have never been tried elsewhere in the world. Dual member was invented by a math student at University of Alberta, which is kind of cool, but very theoretical and potentially risky. Further, the BC government hasn't given us the full details about what's going to happen, and MLAs will decide that after the election. This leaves a lot of important information unknown, as Suzanne brought up in her talk. With all this uncertainty, why should people vote for the devil they don't know?
Well, there is always a risk, of course, that people will simply default to the devil they know. But your specific question. So first of all, you are right that the dual member option is new. I also think it's highly unlikely that it will be the successful outcome. Of the other two options, they are both not new, but also slightly modified. And actually, this is where I give kudos to the Attorney General for tweaking the different models on offer to make them unique to our needs and geography. And in particular, when the consultation occurred in the lead up to this referendum, what was heard loud and clear is that people wanted to maintain local representation and regional representation. And so even with the mixed member system on offer, normally in other countries that use mixed member like New Zealand or Germany, the 40% that comes from the party lists are for the whole country. But that's not what's on the ballot in this system. It's actually regional lists. So every MLA would be accountable, if not to a local riding, then to a region. And they were consequently able to assure that no region would have fewer MLAs. The rural-urban option is also an innovation of a sort, but it combines two systems that are in use in other countries. They're not completely new. And kudos again. I think what they did there is we had these other referendums on STV, what the Citizens Assemble on Electoral Reform recommended. I liked it. I voted for it. But one of the shortcomings of STV was that it didn't work great for rural communities where ridings were already large. And so under rural-urban, those rural communities won't use STV. They will use mixed member. I actually think it's a great innovation. But also, there's really only one question of significance that isn't known under mixed member. And that is, for the 40% who are drawn from party lists, is the party going to decide the ranking? Or will it be open ballot where people will vote not just for the party, but for their preferred person on the list? I have to say, I wish the Attorney General had said it would be open list. I would be shocked if that system is chosen and it is an open list. Both the NDP and the Greens are on party supporting open list. Every advocate for PR supports open lists. So that will actually, I think, empower the individual voter to choose the people they most like.
Thank you. Next question's for Suzanne. The government has put in place in the law that enables this referendum a requirement that after two elections, if the referendum passes, there will be another referendum where British Columbians can decide whether or not to keep the new system. Given that there's now a safety valve in place, is there any reason British Columbians should not experiment with a new system?
Scott, see this piece of paper here, which is folded up? This is a share in the Brooklyn Bridge. And I'd like to sell it to you for $2,000. I guarantee you it'll work. It'll buy you a piece of that bridge. Do you want it?
It'll pass on that one. But it's a little different than a
provincial legislation. No government can buy the future government. So the answer to that is lovely thought, but you have no idea whether it will happen or not. Let's go back to the party lists for a second. Let's use my Northern BC example. In Vancouver, you might possibly be able to find these people. They'll all have their offices on West Broadway somewhere, and I guess you can go find them if you really want to talk to them. The only thing you're going to talk to them about, by the way, is politics. That's their purpose of being there. If you're in Northern BC, you're going to be one massive mixed member riding. You'll have, instead of 11 MLAs, you might now have six. And then you're going to have these party carbuncle in the MLAs. Where are their offices going to be? Prince George. What good are they actually going to do anyone? Like right now, if you have a problem in your riding, any kind of issue whatsoever, whether you don't like the party that your MLA ran under or not, you go and see that MLA. Believe me, people come in and give you all kinds of opinions when you're an MLA. I know Ian will confirm that. People come in and talk to you, and you take those considerations back to Victoria with you because you are their representative. The party MLAs, the party list people, the people, when you vote for a political party, you're choosing their list. Who do they represent? They don't represent the North. They don't represent Vancouver. They represent their political party. So much so that in New Zealand, which we can also compare ourselves to, they have now passed the Waka Jumping Law. Isn't that a great name, the Waka Jumping Law? So if you're Maxime Bernier and you quit your political party in New Zealand, your party leader can not only, well, your party leader can then actually kick you out of the parliament, gone, you actually lose your seat altogether, and they can fill your seat with the next person on the list. Imagine, no voters allowed, thank you very much. No democracy allowed, thank you very much. We have to keep our wonderful, blissful state of proportionality, and I, the party leader, own this territory, not you, the voters. That's what mixed member is, and that's what, now we're not, I will agree that nobody's proposing that in Canada, but that is the philosophy of proportionality, that proportionality is the key. Those party reps are key. Never mind what the voters want, it's what the parties want.
Thank you, Suzanne. I think we've drifted a little off the original question.
I was just going to say, since Suzanne took a little detour here, I want to pivot it back to Seth to let him respond to a couple of things. And one of the questions I actually wanted to ask you was about this idea of under proportional representation, having less local representation, and how is that made up? And I'm sure you will probably respond to other things as well.
Well, no, I'll go there. I mean, I wanted to make the point about riding size under mixed member. So under mixed member, in order to not significantly increase the size of the legislature, for those 60% of MLAs who are elected locally as they are now, the ridings would need to become about two-thirds larger. In other words, the provincial ridings would still be marginally smaller than they are federally. Is that so terrible? You keep pointing to Ian. You were a federal MP and a provincial MLA. Can you manage both? I think you can manage both. It's not a big deal. But you also get, through those additional regional seats, more diversity, which is how I want to respond to your question, Ian. And I'll respond this way. Suzanne is depicting the role of the MLA strictly in terms of its role in terms of being a good constituency MLA, as I'm sure you were, incidentally. But it's more than that. I went to see my MP for the first time when I was 15 years old. I was a little weird as a teenager. And I've been to see my MP and MLA many times since. Never as a partisan, but nor to ask for their help with the service. I've always gone as a citizen to engage them on a topic that I care about, to ask them to please consider voting a particular way. Because what matters in local representation isn't just geographic proximity, it's also political affinity. Now, right now, if I were a lefty type voter and I lived in the interior of BC, I would have to drive for a day to find an MLA who shared my political worldview. Under every one of the three models before us in this referendum, you would have a mix of both a nearby MLA who is your local constituency MLA and a close by MLA with whom you share your political affinity. You will always have somebody to talk to and engage with who you think can carry your views forward. And I think that matters. And the fact that Suzanne probably can't give us an example of a time when she voted against her party speaks volumes to the fact that who your MLA and their political affinity absolutely matters.
The next question is for Suzanne. You've discussed at quite a bit of length today about the benefits of having a local MLA as a representative, someone you can go to if you need any constituency services. However, plenty of people from all across the spectrum have stories of when their constituency wasn't all that helpful to them. Would it not be better to have a situation where you do have multiple representatives. So if one of them is not effective, you can go to another.
The wonderful thing about our system is the accountability. And if your constituency representative is not useful, generally, I mean, they might have helped 12 people and not the 13th. You don't know the dynamics of the individual situations. But if they're ineffective as a constituency representative, they won't be voted back. That's the system of accountability that we've got right now. And that's the wonderful thing about our system, which is if you don't like your constituency MLA, out they go. But even more important, if you don't like the government and you don't like its policies, you get rid of them. And that's very healthy, that kick the bums out theory of government, which is that you have to be able as citizens and as a province to change governments. So when you have the, as I said, the coalition, who is accountable and how do you change governments? It becomes much more difficult, and it's really important to be able to do that. Back to the individual MLAs, they are impartial, nonpartisan MLAs in the riding. It is, of course, true that they have a political role because they are members of a political party which will be in government or in opposition. And the whole point of the political party is to put forward a united front on an issue. But the wonderful thing actually about having a government and an opposition is you test ideas. So it is never the case that if your sympathies are more with the opposition, that your views are not being aired. If you want to have a political discussion in your riding and you don't like the politics of your MLA, you go talk to your local riding association of the party that you do like the politics, and then you organize to get your person in next time. That's how our system works. It's a healthy system. It works extremely well and is the reason we have had such good, stable governments and strong democracy here in British Columbia. We should not be giving that up.
All right. Well, now we want to give you a chance to test each other's ideas, as it were. So maybe, Suzanne, if you can pose a concise question for Seth and if he can give a concise answer, and then we'll go back and forth. And if you're concise enough, we can fit a few more of those in, and then we can go to the audience and see what they think.
Well, I think that actually I would rather hear from the audience, but I will. We'll test this out on one or two questions, but I actually do think it's very interesting to hear what the audience thinks about things and questions from the audience. So one of the fundamental things, Seth, that I have with the argument in favor of proportional representation is it strikes me as being extremely undemocratic. And here's why I say that, because you say we don't like policy lurch. Well, a couple of things to say on that. Most policies, by the way, FYI, are unanimous in the House. Most things go through unanimously. The ones that are noisy are the ones that are controversial in one way or the other. And that's why, as I said a moment ago, you have government and opposition. But if government makes a really bad decision, and I think we can turn to Ontario, where the decisions around some of the cost of the alternate energies were very expensive. I don't want to debate the issue. But the fact of the matter is, it does seem that a lot of voters were very unhappy with that. It seems very undemocratic to say that they shouldn't be entitled to change government. Like, that's what you call policy lurch. That's what I call healthy democracy. If voters don't like what one government did, they're entitled to put in an ex-government. Is that not the case?
Yes, and they would. I mean, any way you cut it under PR, the Wynne government was going to lose. And Kathleen Wynne would not have remained premier. It's conceivable that in a PR system, there would have been an NDP government in which the Liberals and the Greens still held the balance of power. But there's no circumstance in which you can look at the Ontario results and think that she would have retained her role as premier. But it would have been a lot less lurch than we have. And I gave the example in my talk around the urgency of climate change, where all you can look around North America now and see time is a-wasting as key things tried to get moved forward and then get undone and so on. Of course, it's about change of government. And in fact, I think you're making my point. Like when I'm going to be a little provocative here, but so you lost the last election in Vancouver Fraser View. I don't think you lost because you were a poor constituency MLA. I'm sure you were an excellent constituency MLA. You lost because the people in that riding wanted a change of government, which is the point. When every one of us goes into the ballot booth, we aren't just voting for single candidates on the strength of them as individual candidates in 87 ridings. We are going into the ballot box with a mix of considerations. We're looking at the local candidate, we're looking at the party, we're looking at the party leader, we're looking at the party platform, but mostly we're going there seeking to influence who will actually command the confidence of the House and get to govern. And right now, almost every single time, except when every once in a while you have a minority outcome like we do now, our system produces false majorities in which a governing party governs with impunity for 4 years without commanding 50% of the popular vote. That doesn't strike me as fair or democratic.
I don't think these were quite concise enough. We can do a second round of this, but Seth, would you please ask Susanna a question?
Well, so on that local point, I guess what I would say is we currently have a political map in which the NDP won almost all the seats on the coast and the Liberals won almost every seat in the interior. So if that local advocacy work, as you say, is so important, advocating for hospitals or schools or so on, what do you say to people in the interior, whole swaths of the BC interior, who are not only frozen out of cabinet, but frozen out of government?
They are very good advocates for their community. They take their point of view forward. But the fact of the matter is, I'm not sure where that argument takes you, because between BC Liberals and BC NDP right now, they are, as you know, we're pretty even in the vote. The BC Liberals and BC NDP got pretty much the same share of the popular vote, and they got the same share of seats. So, in fact, we do have proportionality right now. And that's the way the cookie crumbles, that some of the most of the Liberals are in the interior and a lot of the NDP are on the island. But people, as I said, have their local representatives, and that is what's important to them. They do have a political role when they go to Victoria. They have their nonpartisan role in their communities. And they do, and they work hard for them. And believe me, when you're a local MLA, you are taking those concerns back, whether you're taking them back to opposition or whether you're taking them back to government. And when they're individual issues, of course, you just take them and work them through in the way that any MLA will work them through. So I just want to comment about this thing that Steph, the PR people love to talk about, false majority. It is not a false majority. That is using the PR language around the kind of vote that we have. We have 87 separate votes. It is the sum of those votes which determines our government. It is not how many people voted Liberal and how many people voted NDP and how many people voted Green and how many people voted for a crazy party, because there will always be some of those. That's the one provincial vote model which PR wants to see. But that is not the model that we have in British Columbia right now. These are genuine majorities. Now, it so happens at the moment, again, there's not a genuine majority in British Columbia, but that's unusual. If you look at Ontario example, there is a genuine majority there. Many, many more ridings in Ontario voted for the current government than voted for any of the other party teams. So that is a true majority, not a false majority. The false majority language is around voting for a political party, and it means it elevates the political party to the most important entity. The political party is not the most important entity. Voters are. You are. That direct link between you and your candidate and the person who goes to Victoria, that's the important link. Not filtering your vote through a political party and letting them make your choices for you. That's what the PR people want. We should not do that in British Columbia. It's a bad system. It leads to poor results.
Thank you. So, Seth, you can briefly respond before going into your closing remarks.
Are we ready to closing remarks already?
It's either that or we could go straight to questions if you want.
We'll take questions after closing remarks.
Let's do some questions first.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, just raise your hands and I'll just repeat. So I'll go in the back first. So the question, I guess I'll just repeat so that it's in the recording that we're going to put out, is basically the Gordon Campbell majority we talked about in 2001 already, where he won all but two seats on about 57, 58% of the vote, is a false majority based on not reflecting necessarily the diversity of views within the province, but even, say, the brand BC Liberal was more conservative than it was necessarily marketed as.
So is that first to me?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think you're raising a good example. So to be clear, the 2001 election was the only time in half a century that Gordon Campbell did win an outright majority of the vote. But you are right in pointing to the fact that even then, our current system creates these distortions. In this case, it was the fact that the Liberals won overwhelmingly every seat except for two in East Vancouver, and that's not healthy in a democracy either. That's why I like proportional representation, is that that doesn't happen. And our current system distorts in all manner of ways. Sometimes you lose the popular vote but win the election. Sometimes you get like what we had in 2001. Sometimes look at the results of the last BC election, where a few dozen people in Courtney Comox decided whether or not we would have another majority Liberal government or what we have now. That's not what should be deciding these things. I want to make another point about 2001, because I think you're right. That first Campbell term was a very hardcore neoliberal program that was adopted.
Hardcore neoconservative.
Neoliberal, you can call it what you want. But what I remember that time. There was a three-year period in which we saw 200 school closures. There were cuts to welfare and children and families and environment. And I spent a lot of time traveling around the province in those years. And over again, I say this in response to the local representation argument. Over and over again, I heard the same story. My MLA has locked their offices and will not take a meeting. It didn't matter if you had an MLA with the office down the street. You didn't have local representation. But you're making another important point, which is that how the different parties handle dissent. I have to say, to me, it's not a surprise that the no side is being led by Suzanne and Bill in particular, who are two from different parties, but two strong partisan apparatchiks, which is to say the system we have now works well for them. Because whether or not you're on the left of the spectrum or the right of the spectrum, the system now lets those partisan people say to everyone else on their side of the spectrum who may have dissenting opinions, close your mouth and line up.
Well, I fundamentally disagree with that last comment, although the apparatchik, I'll have to go look that up and see whether I agree or disagree. I'll report back. So back to my discussion a few moments ago. It was not a false majority. It was an actual majority two ways over. Is a large majority like that healthy? Maybe not, because you don't get the opposition that we have now. Like, it is actually very healthy to have an opposition. Sometimes people don't like that, by the way, the push-pull in the House and why do they argue with each other and so on. I would say that unless it gets really personal and really acrimonious, it's healthy debate, and we should welcome that in our society because it's actually good. So to my point about the 87 elections, it was an actual majority, not a false majority. That word false majority only comes in when your vote is for the political party rather than the individuals. But secondly, it sounds like you weren't in love with that government. But what happened in the next election, though? Exactly. So, and that's really my point about accountability. Then that's the important feature of our system right now, is you have that accountability. So if you make people unhappy by what you do, you will not be kept in. So as to Seth's point, thank you for being complimentary about me as an MLA. You're right. The province was ready for a change of government. After 16 years of the BC Liberals, I hate to say this, it kind of broke my heart at the time, but there you are. The province was ready for a change. So there were individual issues in my riding, and there were issues all around British Columbia. But that is the important thing, and that is, as I've said quite a few times already, that's the beauty of our system, is that accountability. That when it's time, the voters can change governments. Under PR, it's difficult to do that because you don't know who's responsible for the decisions. People stay in. I talked to a guy from Austria this summer. He said that their representatives stay in for decades. You never really get rid of people. They're just in because they're not really accountable. And as long as they're near the top of the party lists, they always get back in. So it's very frustrating. So when Seth says countries don't change very often, that may be true. But you ask your European friends as you're out and about this week and you're thinking about your ballot, they'll say to you, it's not a good system. Europeans who live here think that they are very lucky to be here in British Columbia. Not universally. There's always going to be exceptions to this. But that we're very lucky to be here with the system that we've got right now, and they would not go back to their PR systems.
I think we have time for one last question, and if you would please make this brief and have a response to be brief as well. You, sir, yes.
So just to repeat, because the mics may not pick it up, and it would be great to hear these questions. Point is, with the first past the post, are we missing the ideas that aren't maybe concentrated in one constituency, but might be widely supported province-wide? And I assume that was first to Suzanne.
And so the future, just please be brief because we are running short on okay. time. So limit to no more than a minute.
So, yes, I understand your point. And believe me, when people vote for a candidate, they are voting for a number of reasons. They're voting because they like the person or they like the party or a mixture of between or a whole bunch of reasons. There's not just one reason. That's our current system. In the PR system, you are actually voting for the party. I think the important thing is that the 87 individual constituency MLAs who are part of political parties and go back to Victoria, believe me, they hear all of these things. And when there's a need for childcare, they are advocating for childcare. They are listening, but they're doing it without the problems that PR brings, the instability of government, the inability to form government, the rise of extremism, the lack of accountability. It's those problems which we see, and we have to look to Europe because we don't have examples around here. It is turning out badly, and we don't need to invite those kinds of problems into BC. We've got a good system right now. We should keep it. Thank you very much.
Seth, your response?
I don't need to respond to that one. I agree.
Okay, excellent. That was nice and concise. Now, if we could please go into closing statements. Seth, your statement.
Okay. Oh, there's so much more that I wish that I could say. I guess I will make a few final points. Under the models that we have before us, the alternative models, we will still have local representation. We will still have local MLAs. They are all hybrid systems, and every MLA will remain accountable, if not to a local riding, then at least to a local region. But I think to that last point, at the end of this, what does the no side have against more choice, more diversity of opinions and parties out there? I think it's healthy. You know, I look out at you, at mostly you're a business audience. You know, you purport to all be about the benefits of choice and competition as healthy to the economy. By what logic do you not think the same holds true for our politics? It's healthier. You know, this question of... you know, it's too unstable, and what would it look like? We have an example right now of what it would look like. We have a minority outcome in which we have an NDP government. We know who's accountable. They're the government. But they are there under a transparent confidence and supply agreement with the Greens. And because of that, they are more accountable. They have to secure their majority, not just once every 4 years, every day. They have to make adjustments. We just saw an example of that last week where they had to make concessions and amendments on the speculation tax in order to keep the Greens on board. And I actually think most of the changes that resulted made it better. That's what it looks like. A few weeks ago... Oh, all right. Let me just say, I think we should trust the values of British Columbians. This is going to be transformative, but having traveled the province for 22 years... I would say the values of British Columbians in the main are good. And when we liberate people to vote their values, the outcome will serve us well.
People always vote their values. Voters are smart.
And
groups of voters are smarter. It's called the wisdom of crowds. Voters make the right decisions for their ridings. Premier Horgan wants you to take a leap of faith and vote for the PR systems, none of which are defined. I actually think it's unjust and unfair to ask people to vote on these undefined systems, none of them which could be properly described. We have a system right now which is simple to understand. You all know how your MLA is elected. It has led us to having stable governments in BC. That's what you give up. That's what the European countries are giving up. Inability to form governments, the rise of extremism. It's happening all around Europe. We don't want to invite that into BC. And successful. I do not see an argument for changing our government, our form of government in BC, because we have one of the most successful jurisdictions in the world. We are, by bringing in PR, we are inviting problems. We do not need to try to invite those problems in. Vote for people. Don't vote for a political party. The political parties want you to vote for them so that they can appoint your people for you. I say let voters make the choices themselves and keep the simple, stable, and successful system that we have right now. Do not be asked to take a leap of faith to a system that nobody can understand and nobody can describe except a government committee later. Let's stick with our current first-past-the-post system. Fill in the first button on the ballot. You don't have to fill in question two. You don't need to. Just put it back in your envelope and send it back to Elections BC. Thank you for your interest today. There's a lot of people in BC who are having a tough time with this. And I really appreciate that you're here listening today. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you both for your time. Of course, I want to encourage everyone to vote in the referendum, no matter which way you do. I imagine you both agree. I imagine both also agree that people should check out the Elections BC website. It has a ton of great nonpartisan, hopefully you both agree it's unbiased information on what you're deciding upon. And good luck, and thank you again for inviting us.